I mean, actually, you know, I mean, it's the same as in the Pancha. We just practice, 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 you know. I mean, slowly, you know, slowly sharpening our knife, you know, and cutting the tree, yeah, the tree of life, yeah. Cutting it, you know, cutting it up bit by bit, yeah. The only difference is that we, you know, once in a while we have some work to do. But apart from this, you know, there's nothing else to do than practicing, walking tranquil, you know, sitting in samadhi. You know. The important thing, you know, we know the fourth noble truth. Seen samadhi panya, seen is that, you know, we keep the eight precepts when we're here as a lay person. Or when we are mitis, yeah, we keep the 10 precepts when we are novices, and we keep the 227 precepts when we are monks, yeah. When we don't go against them, yeah, not willingly, yeah, not intentionally, yeah, knowing, yeah. That's it, yeah. So the first thing is out of the way. The second thing is samadhi, and that seems to be the most difficult for us. Yeah? The ability to concentrate on one point and to develop the knowingness about what is happening at this point. Be it the Buddha or be it, you know, be it the breath around the tip of the nose. Yeah? I don't want to talk, yeah, too much about samadhi, yeah. And then the third is panya, the development of wisdom. The development of wisdom is two stages, or you can have just one stage, you know, practicing a super practice, the loathsomeness of the body. And just to, as a reminder for yourself, you don't have to make the body loathsome, you know, it is loathsome. When we open it up, you know, I mean, we don't want to see it, what is, you know, the poo's blood and the shit, you know, and all, or the stomach, when we open the stomach, you know, 2 hours after we had our meal, I mean, it's a disgusting smell and it's a disgusting sight, yeah? I mean, remember when once in a while you threw up, you know, I mean, yeah? You remember that, yeah? That's in our stomach and we don't care about what is in our stomach. We only care about, you know, about the outside. Yeah? But we can do it in two stages. The first stage is to see that the body is not self, yeah? I mean, separate ourselves out from the body, leave the body and look at the body and see that the body and the citta do different things. Yeah? I mean, I talk often about it, you know, how we can do it. Yeah, we can do it by separating, you know, the parts of the body and putting in front of us. You know, I mean, severing the hand or the fingers or, you know, how much detail you want, you know, no matter what, yeah. The feet, you know, the lower leg, you know, the upper leg, you know, the lower torso, the middle torso, the upper torso, you know, the brain, you know, and the head, you know, and so on and so on. And just put it in front of you, you know, and see what is sitting there and watching all these parts of the body. And then asking yourself, which part of the body is the body? Yeah? Not just body parts, yeah? And you assemble them back together, you know, and then, you know, the moment you take one of the body parts, you know, I appears again. Oh, I, it's me. It's my head. It's my brain. You know, it's my, yeah, my, yeah. And so on. And then you put it out again, you know, until it clicks, yeah. And it has to click, not, you know, oh, yeah, yeah, I know. No, this is not clicking, yeah. It has really to click inside, yeah. That's the first part. And then we do have to do the asupa, yeah. I mean, we can do all, you know, all in one go, you know, doing the asupa, but we can do separate it out. Yeah. The first identification with the body of being self, you know, is necessary for entering the stream, yeah, seen, yeah, the precepts, yeah, keeping the precepts, yeah, knowing that the body is not self, yeah, and, yeah, believing in, you know, or trusting, you know, that there's karma and that there are results of karma, that there's heaven and there's hell, that there are beings in heaven and hell, or beings in the 31 realms of existence, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are certain realms of existence, you know. I mean, we've been to most places, you know, in our billions or maybe even trillions of lives that we lived, yeah. I mean, we not only lived as human beings, we lived as animals, we lived as ghosts. How many times have we spent in hell, you know? We lived as devas, yeah. And once, yeah. And we go on and round and round and round about, yeah. So, and the problem is, you know, the problem of our going round and round, yeah, is first the self-identification, yeah, but then also our attachment to this body. Just like people are attached to the car, you know, when their car breaks down and cannot be cannot be mended anymore, I mean, then we buy a new car, yeah, because it is so comfortable, yeah. Or, you know, I mean, do whatever you take, whatever you like, you know, as a comparison. Eh? But now, nowadays, when their smartphone breaks down, they have to instantly get a new smartphone, yeah? Because they cannot live without the smartphone anymore, and we cannot live without a body anymore. I mean, it doesn't really matter what kind of body it is, you know, if it is an animal body, or if it is a ghost body, or if it is a body in hell, or if it is a deva body, we cannot, yeah? So that's why we have to see and to lower the attachment to the body. And that's why we open it up and look what is inside, yeah? And see the loathsomeness of this body, yeah? I mean, try, you know, I mean, in the beginning you try to imagine, you know, open up, you know, if you don't like to open up your own body, open up somebody else's body, yeah? Take a knife, you know, take the scalpel, you know, and you know, remove the skin, and then look what is underneath the skin, yeah? And then remove, you know, then remove the flesh, you know, remove the tendons, huh? remove the muscles, what is underneath the muscles, you know, and look and look and look until there's nothing left, yeah? I mean, you can all place it, you know, in front of you, the tendons, the bones, you know, and then, well, what is there? It's a mess, yeah? Or take out the quivering heart, or, you know, I mean, or you know, open your scalp, you know, and take out the brain and have it in your both of your hands and look at it, yeah? That's what makes you think, you know, that's what you think it makes you think. Huh? And what is it, yeah? It's a mass, yeah? Or the nervous system, yeah? And all this, yeah? It's just a information, the nervous system is just an information highway, yeah? All these things. And with, you know, remember, you know, I mean, we have the things, greed, hatred, and delusion, yeah? Greed, you know, greed and hatred are born within the body. It's not only the body, you know, it's not only the physical body, yeah? It is what the body gives us, yeah? The smell, the taste, yeah? The touch, the hearing, the seeing, yeah? That's all, yeah? I mean, it is included within the investigation of the body, yeah? Don't forget it, yeah? Because that's written, yeah, I mean, we have to keep the body alive, you know, I mean, for seeing, for doing, you know, I mean, for physical work, you know, and, you know, for all sorts of creation. That's why we love this body, you know, because it can do all sorts of things. Yeah? And it smells, it tastes, you know, and all these things, yeah. So when you eat in the morning, you know, I mean, separate it out, you know, taste, you know, I mean, stop your mind by thinking this is nice, this is not so nice, this is crunchy or not so crunchy, you know, just feel it, yeah, and then separate out the taste, yeah, it's just seven tastes, you know, and all the tastes mixed together give a different kind of food, huh? No matter, yeah, I mean, you have so many possibilities to mix the seven tastes, salt, you know, sour, what is it, bitter, and so on, yeah. And you mix it in different, you know, in different quantities, you know, and you get a different taste, yeah? I mean, that's what we are going for. You'll be going for the taste, yeah? Yeah? And, but the moment, you know, it leaves our our mouth, you know, and goes beyond, you know, goes beyond the senses, you know, it ends up in the stomach, and then, yeah? It doesn't really matter what we ate, yeah? Yeah? I mean, it depends then on, you know, how the stomach can deal with what we ate, yeah? And sometimes it cannot deal with it, you know, because, I mean, we only go for the taste and not for what the body needs, yeah? So investigate this. You know, you have every morning, at the mealtime, you have the opportunity to investigate that. Also hearing, investigate hearing. There is hearing, you know, what, yeah? Last time I told you, I'm in the sati, the sati, the knowingness, it knows, yeah? What sound comes in, when a sound comes in before it actually, enters the ears, and it's the same with the sight. What is sight? Investigate these things. Yeah? What are you seeing? Is that what you're seeing? Because you see something and instantaneous, the label comes on. Yeah? This is this, this is that. Is it really this? Ask yourself, is that what I see? Or is it just color and form what I see? Yeah? It's the same with sound. Is that really what I hear? Yeah? What do I hear? What I actually hear? Yeah? Investigate these things. You have 24 hours a day, for doing these things. Yeah? Unless there's some work to do. Yeah? Also, when you sweep, look at the things, and look at your action. When you do walking meditation, be aware of the body movement. Yeah? If you have good concentration, be aware of how the body moves. Yeah? Don't think about it, just be aware of it. Yeah? When you listen, be aware of listening. When you see, be aware of seeing. Yeah? And so on. When you taste, be aware of tasting. So this is, greed and hatred, are rooted within our body. Yeah? And we want to see, we want to, we want to taste, we want to feel, we want to touch, and so on. Yeah? And we want to think. Yeah? And that's why we take this, Just like, people take a car because they want to go far, They want to feel comfortable, they want to have an air conditioner, they want to have an air conditioner in the car, they want to have a radio in the car, so they get distracted from all these things. Yeah? And that's what distracts us from reality. Yeah? And then delusion is, being deluded about what we see. Yeah? Once we investigated the body to the fullest, we can enter the state of anagami or non-return. Yeah? But the non-returner still has to investigate delusion. Yeah? And delusion are formed, formed in between thoughts and memories. It's a combination of thoughts and memories. Yeah? It's very difficult to grasp. Yeah? Because it goes so fast. Yeah? Memory and thoughts are going hand in hand. It's very, very small threaded. Very, very intervened, very intertwined. Yeah, and it is very difficult to break. To see, what is thought and what is thought and what is memory and association, because it goes so far. So. Our sati has to be up to the speed, yeah? Lungta Mahabodha called it, for investigation of the body loathsomeness, we need sati panya, yeah? For the investigation of delusion, we need maha, the great sati, great panya. Yeah? The last thing is avicca, ignorance, yeah? What is ignorance? It's not our ignorance. People believe, ignorance and delusion, what is the difference? Yeah? No, ignorance, avicca is ignorant about itself. That is why it's called ignorant. It is about its own state, it's ignorant. Yeah? It doesn't know what it is. Yeah? It's a phenomenon. Yeah? And it doesn't know. It also adheres to the principle of anicca anatta dukkha. Yeah? So, it arises and ceases, yeah? And it's dukkha, there's some restlessness within this avicca, yeah? But it is different from the restlessness that we normally feel, it's very, very fine, yeah? It's a burning, and there's a dukkha in it, and it's a burning dukkha, yeah? Anyway, we hardly get to this point, so what is the point of talking about it? Let's go first to the stage of Sotapanna, and then go to the stage of Anagami, and then once we are at Anagami, we can talk about Avicca. Okay, so that is enough, you know. I mean, it's just a reminder, you know, for why we are here. We are here to break out of the prison, yeah. And the biggest prison is the prison of this body, you know. It's the stage of anagami, because then we know we don't come back anymore. Yeah? Not in this prison of the body, not in the prison of other bodies, you know, and light bodies or whatever bodies there are. Yeah? Okay, if you have any questions, you can ask them now. Otherwise, you know, there are some questions you can ask. Yeah?
This is the sutra.
What?
This is the sutra. A sutra in the Pali Canon.
Yeah?
Where a man come to talk to the Buddha.
Yeah?
And he said to him that people say that you teach that everything that happened to him is due to his karma.
Yeah?
The Buddha answered, no, that is not what I teach.
Yeah.
And he said, later, I don't recall it by heart, but he said that karma is only one of fifth or sixth, if I recall correctly, laws that govern what happened to human. But yet, I see like in the Buddhist society,
yeah,
like everyone think that everything that happened people is due to his karma.
No, I never say, you know, everything, yeah? I mean, 99.9% of what is happening to you is karma. I mean, the Lord Buddha even, you know, I mean, what I recall, yeah? But if you show me the sutta, you know, I mean, then I mean, about Pali, you know, you can quote me wrong, you know? I mean, I can be quite wrong, yeah? But what I remember is what the Lord Buddha said, that most of, you know, I mean 99%, you know, of what is happening to us is due to our karma, yeah? But he said there is chances, yeah, that can happen to you. I mean, just look at yourself, you know, I mean, look at yourself, what is happening to you, and then, you know, find the cause of this karma, and you will see that most of it is karma. But, you know, what is the point, you know, of arguing that there are other things?
The point is, I saw that in the Buddhist society,
yeah,
people tend to blame the victim. I've saw many times that people blame people, for example, from Africa, for being, because they are poor.
Yeah.
They say that they might deserve it because of their karma. They were born in a poor country. But the Buddha said, if I recall correctly, one of the laws is where you are born.
Yeah.
One of the laws, apart from karma,
yeah,
like where you are born, has nothing to do with your karma. And weather too, if I recall correctly, has nothing to do with your karma. A rain can fall.
Show me. Because, I mean, where you are born, it is not only because of your karma, it's also because of your connection with the people where you are born. So, in these connections are due to your karma, the people that you meet in this life, you know, and you get very friendly, very comfortable with it, and then you're very likely, you know, to be born in the same area where these people live. Yeah? So, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I have to read the sutta, you know, show me the sutta, and then I read it, you know, and then I can answer you. But, I mean, I'm unaware. I'm only aware of the statement of the Lord Buddha that said, you know, I mean, there are chances, but what is happening to us is mostly our karma. It is wrong when you say everything is due to our karma. Yeah? But what does it matter? Yeah? I mean, the question is, what does it matter? You know, I mean, we can see what is coming back to us is because of our own doing. Yeah? Most of us, you know, I mean, I checked it, you know, for 20 or 30 years, I checked it for myself, yeah. And yes, there are some things that happened to me I couldn't relate to as being my karma. But, you know, I mean, 99.9% was karma, yeah. I mean, I saw it within myself. What creates karma? What creates this kind of karma that happens to me, yeah? And then I see that I have this root within myself. So, I mean, I'm using this karma that comes back to me as a remedy, you know, to remove the roots of this kind of, what creates this kind of karma. That's all. Yeah. I mean, think about what you want. You know. I mean, that's how I. You know. That's how I practice. Yeah. I mean, whatever happened to me, I reflected about myself. Do you have the same thing? Yeah. Because most of it is a projection. Yeah. It's a projection. We project, you know, our own doings onto somebody else, you know, and we loathe it, you know. And then I took it back to see and see the other person as a mirror, or the or whatever is happening to us as a mirror, you know, that reflects my own doing. Yeah. And then I got rid of it. Yeah. Because if you think, you know, somebody else does it unto you, or this is doing unto you, and you have no reign over it, then it is the same as believing in God, you know, who has the power, you know, to manipulate you. No, whatever you do, you know, it is your of your own doing, of your own volition. Yeah? But show me the sutta. Maybe I understand it differently. Yeah?
Sure, I just need to. Access to internet or my phone.
Yeah, give me the number. No, you don't need it, because I mean we have the middle length saying.
You have the middle Nikaya?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
And pretty much I would remember it, because I pretty much read all of the middle length saying. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so you had a question. No? Yeah.
It doesn't matter which path one that it is, it would be all five khandhas that need to be let go of in that moment, not just the body.
What are the five khandhas?
The sanya, sankara,
yeah.
all of them would need to be let go of.
No.
To have a taste of nibbana at a path one, it would be all five khandhas. Even extreme,
I mean, that is the maga, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you let them, if you can let all of the five khandhas go, you enter nirvana.
Yeah, it's the moment.
Yeah, the moment, yeah. In that moment, of course, everything. I mean, in the moment, nothing, you know, I mean, there's just knowingness, there are no khandhas. It's just like in Apana Samadhi. That's why I say Apana Samadhi and the path moment are very similar, but they are not the same. I mean, go into Apana Samadhi and see, you know, because there are no khandhas. And that is the amazing thing about it. Yeah? There is nothing. Yeah? I mean, there's just this knowingness that doesn't have any object of knowingness. Yeah? And that's why, you know, they are so similar, but they are not the same. Yeah? The Maga and Apana Samadhi. Yeah? Okay? You cannot, on your own volition, let go of the five khandhas. Yeah? I mean, you can let go of the five khandhas if you dive into Apana Samadhi, because then they are gone. Yeah? Everything is gone. The whole universe is gone. Yeah?
Back to Meishi Emily's point.
Yeah.
Is you can use it as a stepping stone to contemplate anicca, anatta, dukkha.
Of course, you can always, you know, any khanda that comes up, you see, you look. I told you, you know, use anicca, anatta, dukkha. Yeah.
And yeah.
And anatta is, you know, it's not me, it's not mine, it's not myself.
And from there, you develop this dispassion, or it's called disenchantment, this dispassionate towards.
Yeah, it is a sort of dispassion. Yeah, I mean, it is always useful. That's why. Tell you, you know, I mean, I told you often, you know, use the principle of anatta, or use the principle of dukkha, to see the khandhas as dukkha, to see the khandhas as not self, yeah? This is a thought, you know, it's not my thought, this is a feeling, it's not my feeling, yeah? I mean, this disenchants us, you know, and it makes it easier for us, yeah? But it does not cut it down yet, yeah? Because the body is the biggest concern, yeah?
What I'm saying is, She said letting go.
Yeah.
Once you penetrate and pierce through this, oh, that's it. They're nothing. They're just empty.
Yeah, but that is your thinking.
Yeah, but once you absorb it and it comes habitual,
yes,
it comes naturally,
yes,
you let go naturally by itself, step by slowly you will just let go, because why would you attach to something that has no substance?
Yeah, ask yourself. Why do you attach to your thoughts, your ideas, you know, that have no substance? Yeah? We do, because, no, letting go, we cannot let go. What we can do is not to believe in, not to attach to. That's what we can do. But we cannot let go. The heart is the only only principle that can let go. But the heart has to understand that what it does is harmful to itself. If it does not understand it truly, it will not let go. Yeah. I mean, I was in the same delusion, you know, when I came from the West, you know, everybody said, let go, and I said, I can't let this go, you know, I mean, it's constantly popping up again. Huh? It's constantly coming and bothering me, even though I know it is not, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, I mean, useless, yeah? And it's still coming up, yeah? And then I came to Silungda Mahabo, you know, and I was in his temple, you know, and after a while he said, some people think, you know, letting go, you know, I mean, we cannot let go, yeah? And he compared with an ant that is on the roof, you know, and wants to go down to the floor. All what the ant can do, yeah, I mean, of course it can let go, but it does not know the command to let go, yeah. I mean, of course it can fall from the roof down to, you know, from the ceiling down to the floor, yeah. But it doesn't know this command, yeah. The command it knows is, you know, one foot, you know, what, or these foots, you know, I mean, in one direction, you know, and then slowly climb along the ceiling, you know, go down, you know, one of the pillars, you know, and then go down to the floor. Then it is on the floor. That's what the ant know. And that's how we have to do it, yeah. We have to do it in the way of investigating feelings, investigating your thoughts, investigating, you know, until, you know, that's the only thing we cannot let go, yeah? I mean, we can use the principles, you know, to disenchant ourselves from it so that it becomes easier, and to teach the heart. That's why I always say, teach the heart. Do you see what you're doing? And you will be so amazed, the heart says, no. It doesn't see the harm. So you really have to show it, you know, 100 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 100,000 times. Do you really know what you're doing? Do you know how much harm you do to yourself? Until the heart understands, in that moment, the moment the heart understands, yeah, that it is painful what it's doing, it lets go instantly. Even though the thoughts are coming up, you know, but the heart does not have the will, no drive to do it anymore. That's why I use the example, you know, if somebody, you know, if a little child has a hand on the fire, yeah, but it's always looking outside, you know, the other way, yeah. And that's what we are doing. Actually, we are looking at, yeah, we are turning our head around, yeah. And we're not looking at other people, what other people are doing. We're looking at ourselves, you know, what we are doing. And the moment the child sees, it doesn't have to say to itself, you know, let go. It automatically withdraws the hand, yeah? It doesn't have to tell itself. It sees, boop, gone, yeah? And that's the way of the heart.
But, I mean, I also quickly realized that, for me personally, I had this notion that, well, you reach a point where, you know, you think, thoughts are not going to appear, the perception is gone, the sankharas are gone, but I think, for example, Ajahn Mun, you know, such an accomplished person, he said sometimes, leave me alone. Why? Because I'm being attacked by the khandhas. So,
this is very difficult for me to answer because I'm not in the state. Yeah,
I'm just saying.
It is, I mean, he explained it. It is a state, you know, of, I mean, how I explain, you know, an arahant is actually not there, and only if it is required for him. He is action and reaction. Yeah. He doesn't have the will anymore. That's why I call avijja, you know, sometimes as this will, yeah, wanting, not wanting these things, you know, the will to create something, the will, you know, to want to understand and want to, you know, yeah, and he doesn't have it. So his whole thing is action and reaction, yeah, and this action and reaction is born of his karma, how he trained himself, you know, over these thousands and millions of lives. Yeah? So his reaction, you know, is towards this, you know, how he trained himself over millions of lives, yeah? And something happens, you know, and then he reacts, yeah? If nothing happens, he doesn't react, he's not there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Rumpa. I had this misconception that you reach a point where, not, you know, nothing comes in your mind. That's wrong. Yeah, you still have to deal with the kindness. It's just that your mindset is surgery. You've cut this.
You don't even have to cut, you know. I mean, you see, it is useful or not useful. Yeah. Or it is necessary or not necessary.
The link is broken. Like
the link, you know, I mean, wanting to act on it is broken. Yeah.
Broken.
Yeah. Difficult, very difficult to explain.
Another question, please. If I recall correctly, the Buddha said that any kind of worship is useless.
What?
Any kind of worship is useless.
Is what?
Useless. Worship is useless.
You did?
Useless.
Useless.
Yeah, he said that. So I'm wondering, where is the line that separates reverence from worshipping? Because I see that in many traditions, but in many chantings, the Buddhists are asking protection from the Buddha. Isn't that worship?
Oh, this is so difficult for me to answer, you know. Because I don't know, I mean, I don't worship, you know, the Lord Buddha, you know, but I see him as my teacher. Yeah. I revere him, you know, and I trust him. Yeah. Not only, you know, in the beginning I trusted him 100%, you know, and then I trusted him 1000%. The longer I go his path, the more I feel the trust, you know. It is faith, trust. Worshipping is something, you know, I mean, it is more like asking, you know, asking the Lord Buddha to, you know, to be of assistance to you. Yeah? But I don't know really, because I never worshipped anybody. Yeah? So I really cannot answer this. Yeah, maybe somebody else can answer this. The difference between worship and reverence. Yeah? I mean, I revere, you know, I respect all people, yeah? But I have a great reference to my reverence to my teacher, to my Munta Mahabodhi. Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the greatest, you know, or the greatest.
To answer the question is sadhak, you develop faith, and there you develop confidence as sadhak, and from confidence springs reverence. So, when you say confident, I am confident in that man that who lived almost 2,700 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I read what he said, it's all true.
Yeah.
And I know because it's from my own experience, not because somebody told me.
Yeah.
And that is reverence because he went, we are not alone here, he's here.
Yeah.
He might be dead physically, but we bow to him because he's alive. I can feel him. He's here. He's watching us now.
Yeah, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Yes, you can see it. You can see it as this. You know, I mean, I would describe it differently, but everybody describes it differently. You know, I would just say faith. You know, I have faith. You know, in what in his teaching. Yeah, I mean.
But it's not a blind faith you put.
It's
not blind.
No, of course not.
It's not blind. Through your own experience,
yeah.
Said that what he said is true.
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, of course, this sounds very, that sounds very strange, you know. I mean, how can that be true, you know? Until I came to the stage to understand, that this was true, yeah. So, anyway, so let's get the questions, yeah? You okay, Michi Sunanda?
Yes.
Or you want to go back to Yukuti?
No, it's fine. I'm a little bit tired, but I'm fine.
You're tired.
When I meditated over the last several weeks, I got fragments of images of past experiences from when I was very young.
Mm.
My mind seems to be putting these images together and trying to convince me that something very bad happened to me at that time. Though I do not have a specific memory of the event, only images of experiences around it. Is this a trick of the mind, or is it possible that a repressed memory is beginning to surface because of the meditation? When this happens, I find it confusing and disturbing, and I find it hard to remain with the meditation object afterwards. Should I follow these images and memories and see what comes of it, or am I possibly being tricked somehow by my mind to create false memories?
Of course it can create false memories, yeah. Of course it can trick you. What I would do is, accept the images that come up, yeah, and then go back to your Buddha or go back to the breath. And over the time, if it is really a memory from your early childhood, if it is really a memory, over the time, over weeks, over months, things will come up, become clearer. So don't worry about, don't even ponder it, just see it, realize it, and then go back to the Buddha. Yeah. And don't let it bother you, because that's why the Kilesas bring up these images, and tell us, that was a memory. Yeah? Yeah. Sometimes it is a real memory, sometimes it's a fake memory. Yeah, they want to distract us, to make us think about this and distract us from our Buddha or from the breath. So my advice is, recognize them, okay, there's a memory or there is this image, and let's go back to the Buddha. Yeah? Don't pay too much attention on it, yeah. The moment you think about it, you're out of your practice, yeah? And if it is really a memory of your past life, yeah? Sometimes these can happen, yeah? Or if it is a memory of your early childhood, yeah? Over the time, if there are real memories, they will come up and show you the whole story. Yeah? So don't worry about it, yeah?
Next. And same person. I have practiced Satipatthana Vipassana for 2 years, it's yeah. Like Mahasi.
Yeah.
So I have a habit of noting thinking, feeling, seeing,
yeah.
And hearing.
Yeah.
When I meditate, and sometimes outside of meditation, I am now trying to develop Anapanasati like you teach, to see what kind of benefits it might bring, and sometimes when my thoughts are very distracting and persistent, I note thinking,
yeah.
Until I'm not distracted and can return to the breath again.
Yeah.
Is it okay to blend these two techniques together in this way?
Yeah, in the beginning, certainly, yes. Yeah, sometimes I even say, in the beginning, if it is so difficult, just say, there's a thought, and then go back to the Buddha, or there's a feeling, go back to the Buddha, note these things, yeah? This noting these things, is the first step, to the knowing, yeah? So, it's not wrong. Yeah? But, in the end, he just should know, yeah, and not note it, Note it is an act of thinking, and that is not really helpful in the long run, for our getting into one point of view. Yeah. But in the beginning, it's okay, yeah.
And there's one thing that bugs me, the people teach there that it's all Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, this noting.
Yeah.
And sometimes people write, oh, I'm doing Satipatthana Vipassana, and they do Mahasi noting thing.
Yeah, but there's nothing about Vipassana. Vipassana is inside meditation. Yeah? Noting things is not inside, because you can note until the end of your life, and this, things will just appear. Vipassana is insight into the matter of things, that these things, you know, I mean, rooted because of this, rooted in our ego, rooted in our hate, you know, or in despise, and where this hate is coming from, and so on. That is Vipassana. To go deeper, noting is the first thing, knowing that these things appear is the first thing, but then you have to ask what came before this, yeah? And that is Vipassana. I mean, rolling back, you know, investigating and asking ourselves. Yeah? So, I mean, it's just Satipatthana in the first stage. It's not really Satipatthana in... what is it? Knowing the breath and the breath... knowing the body, the breath, body... I forgot it, you know.
Knowing breathing in.
No, that is the body as a body inside. Yeah, inside the body, you know, knowing the feeling within the feeling, knowing the chitta within the chitta, yeah.
Yeah, observing.
Yeah, that is. Oh, is it the Mahasati?
Please
don't quote me on this.
Yeah, people get that, like, The body and the body is like, I just look.
But it's certainly, no, it is Satipatthana, yeah, in the first stage, you know, but it is not Satipatthana Vipassana. Vipassana is really asking questions, yeah? I mean, if you don't ask questions, what came before, or what is this, you know, how does the liver look like, you know, when I cut it up, how does it look, what is the structure of the liver, or what is the structure of the heart, how does the liver differ, you know, the structure of the liver differ from the structure of the heart, that is Vipassana. People think, you know, I mean, just noting is not Vipassana, because they can note for the rest of their life and nothing changes. Because these things constantly come up, yeah? And we don't want these things to come up, that's why we have to investigate, you know, what brings these things up, yeah? What makes the engine work, yeah? Our mind engine, okay?
And the last one, any reason why the monks are mostly Westerners? Any reason why the monks are mostly Westerners?
Here? Yeah, because they feel, you know, I mean, of course, you know, they come because of the language, yeah? It is easier to understand your own, you know, I mean, most of the people in West, you know, speak English. So, I mean, it is much easier, you know, to come if you want to understand, you know. And if you have a teacher that speaks your language, yeah. Dhamma should be taught in the language, in our own language. So that is where we understand best, yeah. If our language is not English, but, you know, we are very used to English, then that is okay, yeah. But Dhamma, you know, if I teach Dhamma in German, it is on a different level, yeah, for the people who understand it, yeah. It is much clearer, much more precise, you know, than when I speak in English, yeah. So, I mean, actually, you know, the Dhamma should be taught, you know, in the language of the listeners, yeah, but because most of you understand English, that's why I talk English, and that's what attracts other Westerners to come here, yeah. I mean, it is difficult, you know, I mean, for myself, it was difficult, even though, you know, in Pantat there were some Western monks, yeah, but most of the people were Thai, you know, and Lungta only spoke Thai, yeah, except for thank you. So, I mean, whatever, yeah, I mean, that's why we are Westerners, yeah? Most of us are Westerners. I mean, but in the beginning it was different, you know, I mean, there were a few Thais, yeah. Okay, all of the questions. Yeah. No more questions? Oh? Good. And then we end the session. I wish you all good insight.